Hello, everyone, and welcome to Million Dollar Decorating, the only podcast devoted to the worlds of design, decorating, and beautiful living. I'm your host, James Swan, and I am thrilled to have you subscribing to the show today. Head over to our website, milliondollardecorating.com, where you can learn more about our family of design enthusiasts. Add your name to our email list, then follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and on Instagram. You'll be part of all the great things that we have going on. And the really amazing thing that's happening right now is that I get to introduce you to our guest today. Known for offering her clients a fresh take on tradition, she brings an inventive mix of classic Southern charm, effortless style, and contemporary updates to each of her designs. A Kentucky native, she received both undergraduate and law degrees from Duke University. She served as a law clerk on the United States Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit before embarking on a litigation practice that emphasized securities and complex commercial litigation. In 2012, after nearly a decade, she left the practice of law to follow her passion into a career in interior design. She and her work have been featured in the Wall Street Journal, Sunset, Pop Sugar, Rue, Pure Pow, My Domain, LA Home, HouseBeautiful.com, HGTV, Good Housekeeping, and California Home and Design, and more. Turns out she is very busy making the world more beautiful. Lindsay Pennington, welcome to Million Dollar Decorating.
Thank you, James. It's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate that kind introduction.
Well, we appreciate all the great things that you have done and are doing. So glad to have you with us today, Lindsay.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'm so curious to hear the story of your journey to interior design. So take us back and tell us how it all unfolded.
The story began a long time ago, back when I was born to a mother who even then went to college and received her degree in interior design. So as long as I've been alive, I've been under the thumb of a beautiful, loving, supportive mother who was also a professional interior designer. And as a little girl, I remember driving around to client meetings with her, wallpaper sample books in the back of the station wagon, and really being involved and fascinated by her world and what she did, and more than what she did, the way that she lived as a person who was really committed to helping others feel more comfortable and more sort of individualistic, I suppose, in their spaces. So taking their personalities and their interests, their number of children, their number of pets, their hobbies, and creating a cohesive whole out of that life fabric and projecting it into a 3D space. I really admire my mother and all the things that she still continues to be an interior designer. But the way that she approached the job made it always seem something very valuable and life-affirming to me.
Wow.
I also I grew up in a family of builders. My grandfather owned a block-making company, uncles who were architects and sold bricks and windows. So where I'm from, which is a very small town in Kentucky, being around all of that family in a very close-knit way and growing up in that environment, it was just in the water from the day that I was born.
And yet, you had to rebel and go off and be a lawyer, right?
I did. I wouldn't necessarily call being a lawyer my rebellion.
Okay.
If any of my friends are listening, they know I've rebelled in many other different ways, much more exciting than being a lawyer.
Now, you have to share something. You got to give us a little bit.
I promise.
Okay.
I was also just a very studious young lady. Loved school. Loved academics. I was passionate about that. I went to college. I had no idea what I wanted to do when I graduated from college. I kind of bounced around in a few different areas. I worked for a documentary film festival. I worked for General Electric. I worked for a professor as his assistant in London for a political science sort of summer teaching expedition. and really couldn't identify what it was that I wanted to do with my life. So as many young people do, they fall into the trap of saying to themselves, since I don't know what I want to do, I guess I'll just go to law school because I can just figure it out later and you can do anything with a law degree. Mm. And while that may technically be true, what obtaining a law degree best qualifies you for is practicing law. And when I was in law school, I met my husband and we got married the first summer, the summer after our first year of law school. By that Thanksgiving, I was expecting my first child. I gave birth to him the following summer. And then upon graduation, was pregnant with my second child and about to head off into my clerkship. So the die was sort of cast in a way for personal reasons. And we up and moved to California, and haven't looked back, at least in that regard.
Wow. Exciting. Yes. So what was the transition like? I mean, or what was the process like? There you are in your law profession, clearly doing well. It sounds like you're an achiever. So anything you put your mind and heart to, I imagine you're going to succeed at. But then all of a sudden, was it a wild hair? What was it that turned your attention back to design?
Feel that when my children were young and I was practicing and I was working for an international law firm. It was the highest echelon of legal practice. It was such an elite environment with such incredibly intelligent, thoughtful people who operated on a professional level that is that everyone, I think, should strive for. Our clients were terrific. The legal issues were terrific. Our firm often represented individuals or companies who were going before the United States Supreme Court. There were so many things going on that my interest in design, which I've always had an interest in design, it probably not necessarily waned, but got put on the back burner during those early years.
Sure.
And after a few years of practicing, let's say maybe 4 or 5, I started to feel the itch again to kind of dip my toe into the creative world and the world of design and really the art of living well. I've always been interested in films and books and art in addition to interior design. So I started a blog. I wrote under a nom de plume, so I wouldn't necessarily get in trouble with the powers that be at work should they find out about it, and really started to get re-engaged in a more academic way, reading mm-hmm. about interior design, reading about interior designers and their practice, and digging deep on a more objective sort of outsider's perspective.
Interesting.
So that went on for several years. I did that for several years. And I remember with my job as a securities litigator, we represented a lot of clients in New York, investment banks and whatnot. And I was constantly traveling to the East Coast and remember walking down the street in New York and passing by or making a detour to go past, you know, Liz O'Brien's shop or John Rosselli and thinking to myself, if only I could get paid to travel and shop for clients instead of being here taking depositions, that would be so phenomenal. So it was started to ferment in the back of my mind as an opportunity. I loved practicing. Further along that I got, you know, the responsibilities become a little bit more administrative and less academic based. I found that a little bit less satisfying. And had been toying with the idea of leaving the practice because I just at a certain point realized it's not how I wanted to spend the rest of my life. Sadly, but happily, at the age of 80, almost 88, my grandmother passed away in Kentucky, and I was very, very close to her. So I flew home to visit before she passed and also for the funeral and stayed a couple of extra weeks to help my grandfather kind of regain his footing. At which time we're sending out the curtains for cleaning and polishing the silver and doing all of this stuff because they maintained just the most impeccable, beautiful Southern home. And I thought, So it was just a turning point for me, and I thought life is too short, really, and this is not what, one thing is what not what I want to do, and one thing is what I want to do, and I have to give myself the opportunity to try my hand at it at least. So I sent an email to all of the people that I knew and my close contacts and let them know I was quitting my practice and starting my own business as an interior designer. This would have been in, I guess this would have been in May, and we had a family vacation planned in June, and someone that I used to practice law with said, thank goodness, you know, I need your help. Let me know what you can do. So I sent off the contract and the proposal and everything to her and went on the vacation, and there were crickets, you know, for 2 weeks, and I thought, what the hell have I done? So we were driving back from Big Sur, and I said to my husband, if there's not a signed contract in the mail when I get home, I don't know what I'm going to do. I've made a huge mistake. And sure enough, we pulled up, and in the mail was the signed contract and deposit. So that's been that way ever since, you know. It's been a wonderful transition. Not easy always at times, but very, very rewarding.
And that's what's the important part, the rewarding part, right?
Yes. Yes.
So what are you working on right now that has you happy and smiling?
Oh, happy. Well, I'm working on a lot of things right now. Not all happy and smiling stuff. You know, putting together purchase orders, and taking measurements and measuring again. Placing orders for plumbing fixtures, you know, so it's such fun. I'm working right now. All of my jobs are terrific in their own way because of the people who are involved. But I'm working right now on a project I find especially rewarding on the personal side. I was referred to two clients who are an engaged couple. They're getting married next month, actually. And they had just bought a house in Santa Monica, pretty near the beach, that was a new build, a spec house, as we call them in California. And it was sort of nice, tastefully done, but didn't really, you know, was sort of made for the masses, right? And they wanted to have someone come in first and help them pick paint colors. And then it was, well, can we now maybe work on the living room a little bit? And now can we do the office? And what about the master bedroom? And we're getting married, so will you help us with our registry? And I've been able to spend time with this couple and see them evolve. This is a really wonderful, romantic time in their lives. They're incredibly generous, loving people, period. But obviously, having the wedding pending sort of heightens those feelings, the sense of excitement and the romanticism of moving in with someone for the first time and setting up house. So I really have a complete relationship with them. We're friends, but we also get to work on all of these different aspects of creating a home that's reflective of both personalities and traditions and backgrounds. I find that really rewarding. I love developing that relationship with people who are young and excited about starting out.
It's a beautiful place to be, isn't it?
Santa Monica. I've been to a couple of worse places.
One or two, right?
Well, you know, I hold Kentucky in a very special place in my heart. So I do find it the most beautiful. But California's pretty close. Pretty close second.
It's got some scenic vistas. One or two. Well, so I think you may have just touched on it, but elaborate a little bit. What is it about what you get to do right now that you're loving the most?
What I'm loving the most about what I do right now is work with, well, there are a few aspects. I'll start with the first, which is working with families, young people who are moving in together, and families with young children, people who are going through transitions in life and want their homes to reflect the new nature of their existence. It's a material manifestation of the psychological experiences we all have, which is that nothing stays the same. Life is change. And I enjoy helping people feel comfortable with their changes in a physical way. I have a client who's her children are older. They've both graduated college and they're moving out. And so we're redoing their bedrooms, one to be sort of a more office space for her, or to be a little bit more of a mature room for one of her sons who comes and stays on the weekends more frequently. So she's experiencing that change in a different way than my clients who just bought a new house in South Pasadena and had a baby last week. So it's being with these people and trying to be supportive in a way that I know best, by engaging with them and their transitions, their ups and downs, and helping them feel that they can come home to a space and a place that feels safe and warm and welcoming and reflective of them, at every stage in their lives. So that's super rewarding. Another thing that I'm doing right now, I did touch on this when talking about the clients that I'm working with in Santa Monica, is helping people with their registries. So I recently launched a new side of my business, a new aspect of my business, which is LP Limited by Lindsay Pennington. And this is a bespoke interior design / registry service that I'm providing to individuals who are, you don't have to be getting married. You may want to have a registry for a housewarming or even for a baby shower. But it's combining all of the taking a broader view of the different elements involved in doing so, not running out to naming no names big box store with one of those, you know, black sort of guns that you use to point at the labels and just whatever anyone says to get it, or that's what my mom had, so that's what I want. And trying to come up with something that's a little bit more personalized for them and is rounded out by additional things that the home needs. For example, bed linens and towels, you know, a vacuum cleaner, just thinking about the house as a whole and using the registry service to incorporate that reference.
What a wonderful idea. How did that come about?
It just came about very organically, having clients who, well, I'm not ashamed to admit I turned 38 a couple of weeks ago. And so I have clients who tend to be on the younger side and who tend to be in their, you know, sometimes late 20s, but often early 30s, mid to late 30s, and even early 40s, who are moving in together for the first time, or who are getting married, who are having a baby. And as I've been working with them on their homes, we've seen that the registry is an opportunity for them to say, oh, well, my home is going to look this way, and I want the registry to reflect that same aesthetic, but I don't know how to necessarily do that or what to pick. So the clients would come to me and ask me, can you please assist with this process? And it's a ton of fun, and, you know, it's exciting, and it's sort of involved. There's a lot less commitment than fabricating a custom sofa, you know, so that part's a little bit, so it's a mentally freeing, I should say.
Mm-hmm. No, I get that completely. Good idea. Keep it up.
Thank you.
Us posted on how that
I will.
I like that idea. Talk to our listeners at home for a moment, Lindsay, and share with them an idea or two that's going to help them create a little more beauty in their own home.
This is a terrific question, and I have given this some thoughts. I don't want my advice to seem too philosophical or theoretical, but I think so many of us are striving. We look at glossy magazines and we see things on websites and they're so beautiful, and they are. But what many clients don't necessarily appreciate is these rooms have been styled and produced for a photo shoot. They look perfect, but perfection is a really heavy cross to bear, and perfection and beauty do not necessarily equate. I would encourage people listening at home to relieve themselves of the burden of trying to have their home look perfect and instead focus on having it look personal. I am always happiest in environments or happiest in people's homes where there are family photos, there are books, there's food on the kitchen counter, there are dogs, There are heirloom pieces, not necessarily antiques, but something that your grandmother or your great uncle handed down to you that you just can't bear to part with, even though it's chipped on the corners and the stain is sort of losing its luster. I think that everyone could benefit in their home, whether you're working with a professional interior designer or not, by embracing that it's a place where we live, and since we are not perfect, our homes can't be either, and to try to instead turn our attentions and our embrace on making it feel very, very much an extension of ourselves.
Very wise words. Very, very smart idea. Not always easy to accomplish, but
no.
Definitely worth working towards. Is that the approach that you took in creating the place that you call home, Lindsay?
Absolutely. I am a magpie by nature, and I'm always picking up doodads and articles here, there, and everywhere, things that catch my attention or catch my eye. I do have a lot of inherited pieces from people in my family. I have a strong attraction to things with a patina, things with history, things with a story behind them, and take the approach and have the mindset that if you love it, you can make it work. You know, it helps for the piece to have some inherent beauty and an appropriate scale. So there's some caveats to that. That's the statement which gets thrown around in design a lot. And I try to encourage my own clients not to necessarily follow it. If I love it, it can work. But maybe not if they love it. It can work. but yes, I think a lot of my work, one of my approaches to my work, and one of my guiding principles is probably the best way to put it in my work, is to adhere to some extent to a sense of tradition or traditional identity. It doesn't mean being stuck in the past, but it means acknowledging that we do take our past with us when we go places, and really accepting that and cherishing that fact. I've never gone into a job one time and said to the clients, oh, we have to get rid of everything. Everything must go. I probably err on the other side, which is trying to keep as many things as possible that the client already has, whether they need to be reworked or reupholstered or cut down or reframed with a new color of paint in the background or wallpaper. I find that to be more challenging than going into, you know, the black box of the Pacific Design Center, which is not a black box per se, but just going into the void and creating a room that's perhaps beautiful, perhaps more modern, perhaps more eclectic, but that doesn't have a tangible connection to the people who live there. So it certainly is a guiding principle in my own life and my own home and my own design. And I could go give you lots of anecdotes about that, but I don't know that that's necessary. If we have more time at the end of the interview, we can circle back.
Well, tell us this. What would our listeners be most surprised to find in your home?
Well, I think something that got left out of the introduction is that I mentioned earlier that I have two sons, but I also have three dogs. They are all Labrador Retriever mixes from the dog pound. But if anyone knew me, they would know that I'm sort of a neat freak and a clean freak. And so coming into my home and seeing dog hair on every available square inch of surface might surprise some people. I think the most surprising thing for me that's in my home, if I'm looking at it from the inside, is a television, because I never, ever, ever watch television. My husband is committed to it, so I've relegated to the furthest corner in the house where he's installed on a little chair, using binoculars to try and see it. So
there you go.
No newfangled electronics for me, please.
Got it. Think about designer style heroes of yours, Lindsay. And if you had an opportunity to spend an hour or so with one of those heroes, might be living, might be deceased, who would you pick and tell us why?
There are many design heroes of mine, but if I had to pick one to sit down and spend an hour with, it would be Mario Botta. I had the pleasure of meeting him a couple of years ago at a book signing in LA for his monograph. And I had, you know, waiting in line to go up and have him sign the book. And he said to me, "Are you a decorator?" And I said, "Yes, yes, sir." And he said, "Too bad. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy." And then he launched into this diatribe about how with the internet, clients don't know anything anymore. And they're out running around looking at things behind your back. And it's just how much the profession has changed. But I would love to have been able to spend more time with him and hear more of his thoughts. I also have a tremendous respect for his work. I love his work and adore his work for all of his clients, the layering, the romance, the colors, the femininity behind it. So that would be my, that would have to be my, if you're forcing me to make one choice, that would be my one choice.
Well, you'd go far to pick one that is more influential, certainly in the world today. A good pick indeed, Mr. Buadas.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Tops.
Yes. And entertaining. Tops.
Oh,
tops.
Beyond.
Tops is the best way to put it. Nothing
yes,
to add.
Indeed. Give us your best decorating advice, Lindsay.
Well, this picks up on what I said earlier about beauty not equaling perfection and trying to let go of the burden of perfection. I also think that it's very important to try to use what you have. I mean, I have a son who is obsessed with basketball and I think would love to be nothing more than a professional, you know, an NBA player. He also happens to be about 4'10". So that might not work for him, but he could translate his passion for basketball into some other area that might be more suitable. So we all have to work with what we have. I have never had a single client, no matter what their relative level of financial commitment to the job was, who didn't have a budget, who didn't have at least an idea of what they were willing to spend on the job and what value they attached to the pieces that they were purchasing. So embracing a budget and acknowledging that everyone is on a budget is a good first start. And then once you have that established, go back to the use what you have advice. See what you have in your home. Maybe you have to take it all out. There's a terrific story of Albert Hadley working for a client. He went to see the client and she told him, "Oh, I'm pretty sure we have to start all over, start afresh." And he took every piece of furniture out of the house and moved it onto the lawn and then took it all back and reinstalled it in the house, but in different rooms and in different configurations. And I think that the conclusion of the story is that they ended up just having to buy a few additional pieces and recover a couple of things. But that story is very instructive because it, first of all, shows that the best decorators aren't motivated by financial gain, and they're not going to urge you to purchase things that are unnecessary if it's not in service of the job and of the client. But also that with a fresh eye, we can really recreate our surroundings without spending any money. So those would be my two biggest pieces of advice for clients at home, for listeners at home who, you know, have the weekend off of work 2 days. Oh, I really feel the need to get the house ready for company for 4th of July weekend. You don't have to go out shopping. Just start there.
There you go. Wise words. Smart approach indeed. Lindsay, we're down to the last question. Are you ready for this one?
I believe so.
All right. Let me paint a picture and get your thoughts. Imagine you woke up tomorrow morning in a brand new world. It's physically identical to the Earth that you know, but you don't know a single soul. You still have all the experience and the knowledge you currently possess. Your food and shelter are taken care of, but your new home is empty. All you have is a laptop, a mobile phone, and about $1,000 in your pocket. What would you do over the next 7 days to begin to decorate your new home?
Well, it would depend on whether or not a mattress was already there, because that would have to be my first purchase. So with just a simple set of white sheets and a white duvet and a couple of pillows, nothing too lavish. Whatever money I had left over after that initial purchase of a bed, I would take pretty much all of it down to the last $50 and go out and buy books. design books, novels, any reference books, all sorts of books. I couldn't live without books. So those would be that would be where I spent the rest of my money, and they'd be perfectly suitable as side tables, coffee tables, entertainment, and should it be necessary, fire starters. The last $50 I would save to buy a candle, because it would be so nice to read by candlelight at night.
Beautiful. A beautiful place to start. Lindsay Pennington, great chatting with you today. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, James. It was a pleasure to be here with you today.
Likewise. We want to say a big thanks to our subscribers who've tuned into the show today. None of this means anything without you. So thanks for your dedication to the show, tuning in and listening every day, sharing news about the show with your friends, and always helping us to grow. Go over to the website, milliondollardecorating.com, and you can catch the notes from today's show. There you'll find a link to Lindsay's website so you can follow all the great things that she is up to. While you're there on our site, click a few more buttons. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and on Instagram. And finally, and most importantly, remember that it's up to you to make your world more beautiful. Looking for a tool to quickly draw a 2D plan and see your designs in a 3D photorealistic render using your own furniture items? Then check out Room Styler. Go to roomstyler.com now.